The Guardian.
Hello and welcome to The Guardian Football Weekly, the countdown to Russia. England impress in Holland as Gareth Southgate finds the Three Lions DNA. But then again, Holland really aren't very good. Joy for Wales in China, Bale sets records and Chris Gunter finds his own fan club. We'll round up the rest of the internationals, discuss Thomas Tuchel's plan to take over Arsenal or Chelsea or PSG, and we'll celebrate Brecon City, relegated already without a win all season. Plus your questions, feedback corner, and that's today's Guardian Football Weekly. We have a panel today. Hello, Philippe Auclair.
Hello, Max Rushton.
You're on the old side of the desk with me.
Mm-hmm.
Opposite us, Priya Ramesh, how are you?
Very good, thanks.
You're nursing an injured face.
I am, after taking a cross to the face when I meant to head it away. But I am happy from the realisation that on the drive back from Manchester, I realised that eight years on, I can still sing the whole of Eminem's Love the Way You Lie without having to refer to the lyrics even once.
Okay. Philippe, can you do that?
Nope.
I don't even know what that song is. Hello, welcome, a debut for Stephen Gonavis from Scouted Football. You are a dirty, cheating Australian.
Our football team's not much better than our cricket team either, unfortunately.
Perhaps they're more honest. Do you want to apologise on behalf of all of Australia for what your cricket team did?
I don't know if it's worth apologising. I think it's something that we're probably more used to than some people might suspect. If
really?
I could just throw out conspiracy theories.
Yeah, well, why not? And, you know, why not get sued in the first minute of being here? Can you tell us what is Scouted Football? What is that?
It's just an account me and some other people run that we focus on players aged 23 and under. If you want to follow us at Scouted Football, we have a free handbook that we do every year, profiling our favourite under 23 players. So, yeah, it's just following and tracking the progress of all those players.
When players reach 24, do you then discard them?
They die in the brains of Scouted Football.
Maybe say that Stephen is actually, he doesn't realise he's not being filmed, but he's trying to place in some advertising for a UEFA Champions League sponsor.
Yeah, he is. Yeah, on his beanie. He's sponsored by Gazprom. England beat Holland 1-0. Philippe.
Oui?
I'm that idiot, right? So come June, I will think this could be our year.
For a moment when you said idiot, I thought you meant like the England fans who are being
I'm not those idiots.
Yeah.
We should just
be clear about which kind of
I will happily say I've never poured beer over someone in a canal boat and I've never sung a song about the war. I was enthused, Philippe.
By what exactly, Max?
By the fact that we've actually played quite nice football and we kept the ball a bit, and I quite liked Kyle Walker playing in a three.
That was a surprising decision, which worked out very well. Indeed.
Because no one even suggested that. It looked to me like Gareth Southgate has a plan and he's going to impose it.
Yes. You could say, the Kyle Walker choice surprised me. I mean, I don't think when it comes to the actual organisation of the team, that's very much of a surprise. And also, what seemed to me the most interesting is the fact that he's relying on what the obvious qualities of his players, and he's trying to find a system in which, you know, he has very young, very pacey players. He doesn't have many creative players as such, but he's got players who are capable of making difference one-on-one. And he's obviously devising a system which is playing to their strengths. I don't think that you could say that of every single England manager, of the recent past. When you see, for example, Hodgson's team was very much almost like a statement of intent. We're going to play progressive football, even though we don't quite have the players for doing that, even though we're not quite playing them in the right position. And this was very encouraging. What is also encouraging is the fact it looks a solid team. I don't think they've conceded a goal in five games?
Yeah. Five or six.
Yeah, so. Which is, speaking from a French point of view, is something that we would very much like to be able to say, but which we can't, obviously. We'll come to that later. But Southgate, who is not somebody who is going to, pound the table with his fists and have these grandiloquent or pompous speeches, is actually putting together a team that is going to look respectable, I think. The only reservation being the group in which they are, in which perhaps this type of football might not be the most effective. That's
because they will sit deep.
Yeah, they will sit deep. And then, therefore, you won't be able to exploit, you know, precisely the explosive qualities of players like Raheem Sterling or Jesse Lingard, whom I thought, by the way, was terrific, wasn't he?
Simon says, is Lingard actually good now?
Well, he was.
What do you think?
Yeah, he was really good.
Yeah, he's, as an impact player, I think he could be really pivotal to the World Cup. I don't think he's the kind of player that is impactful consistently over games, but he's got a good goal sense, and when he gets into central positions, drifts inside when he's playing on the wing, he can be, yeah, very crucial in that way.
Is it a Dele Alli or Jesse Lingard choice? Which I think before Friday, everyone decided it was definitely Dele Alli, and now it might not be.
I think it's always useful to have that variability in options, I guess. And I think they do bring slightly different things. Dele Alli, I think, tends to drop a bit deeper and contribute a bit more in the overall play of the team. And Lingard obviously has that knack of finishing off chances just in and around the box, which is invaluable in a World Cup if you have teams that are going to sit against you. And you have someone who can actually have a shot at goal and find the target more often than not. But going back to the point that Philippe made about Kyle Walker, I think it's also an effect that we're seeing of the quality of coaches in the Premier League, because you have the likes of Walker, Oxlade-Chamberlain was really impressive, and they're being coached by, you know, Klopp and Pochettino and Guardiola, and I think that's really starting to make a difference, because Walker, fair enough, he doesn't play at centre-back for City, but in possession, City do have a structure where the full-backs tend to come in come in centrally and contribute in similar areas as to a right-sided centre-back. And I think that is going to be a very useful advantage that England are going to have in terms of having all of their players being coached by essentially the best core of coaches in the world.
I mean, for Walker, you know, this situation where nominally playing at right back, they will actually drift right ways. So what you had as a back four becomes, in fact, a back three if the left back stays back a little bit, and Walker goes in the middle, and that suddenly, you know, suddenly creates a bit of confusion in the opposing team. And it's also a sign of flexibility. The players, you talk about the coaches, man, so the players have improved.
Absolutely.
It's as simple as that. They are obviously, they have been pushed by managers who make them think. And surprise, surprise, well, the English players are not more stupid than the others, you know, trust them.
And I think there's a lot more like depth across the board in most positions except probably midfield. And I think that there's less of a set starting 11, whereas in years past, I feel like England probably had like their stars like Rooney, Lampard, Gerrard that, you know, always had to be in. Whereas now it's a group of similarly skilled players with different qualities that suit different styles, and it allows Southgate to be more flexible. And I think Southgate himself's kind of taken a few pages out of the books of managers that he's seen coach his players in the Premier League too.
Jordan Pickford was excellent. Can anybody see? I mean, Jack Butland looks like he's going to start on Tuesday.
Yeah,
I think Dyer and Alli will start that game as well, according to Southgate. But can anyone see past Pickford in goal?
I think there was that moment where he came out all the way to the right flank and he didn't hoof the ball up. He passed it to a teammate. And if England do want to play this kind of progressive football that Southgate is endorsing, Pickford would be the natural number one.
It is only Holland, Priya. Do you want to do?
How
long do you
want to?
How long do you want to spend discussing Holland? Who was the giant lump up front?
Bas Dost.
Yeah.
He's actually got, I think, the most goals over the last year, apart from Lionel Messi, in the top six leagues. So he's he's not quite just a lump.
Okay.
He's a lump that scores goals.
Didn't they bring on an even bigger lump as well? Who was that?
Wout Weghorst.
Yeah, I loved him.
Plays for AZ Alkmaar. He played for Heracles a few seasons ago and they were very impressive and got to the Europa League. But there is that issue of centre-forwards, isn't it? A lot of us actually thought he wouldn't go with the centre-forward. He'd start with Promise and Memphis Depay up top. But in deciding to go with Bas Dost, there was no sort of tailoring of the team to play to Dost's strengths. And there weren't many crosses that we saw from Van Aanholt or Hartebeer. A lot of them just preferred to get it all the way to the flank, up the pitch, and then either Promise or Memphis would come along, they'd play like a triangle and lose the ball. So Dost was really isolated in a way, so even if you play him, you need to make sure you actually do something that helps him score goals, which is clearly something he can do. But there is a structural problem as well, because there is such a terrible, terrible lack of creative players. And I look upon the years when we had Schneider and Van der Vaart and could afford all that luxury, and suddenly we've got zero. And it was very interesting that the same evening, Hakim Ziyech scored a goal and created the other for Morocco. And it was only a while back that Danny Blind looked past Ziyech and said, well, we're not going to give him a call up or because he's not playing in the position we want him to, blah, blah, some sort of very specious excuse. And it just really highlights how structurally deficient Dutch football has been, and the Kaan Verbeek have a lot of work to do in terms of recognising talent and being able to hold on to it and just transforming youth football, because the youth teams, the under-17s, the under-19s, under-21s, haven't been doing really well either. They lost, I think, 5-1 to Belgium.
They've gone off the radar completely,
haven't they? Yeah, I think the under-21s, of which quite a few players start for Eredivisie teams quite regularly, some of them play in Germany, they lost 5-1 to Belgium, a lot of whose players I'd never heard of. So it is kind of a very stark reminder that even if these players are individually good, something is just not clicking at the national team level, whether they're all just too similar or it's just a lack in quality that, you know, we haven't had in 3 decades. You have to look to just before the likes of Van Basten and Gullit came around. That's when you had a bit of a drop in quality. And then since then, we've been incredibly blessed to have all that talent. And I think Koeman just has a very tough road ahead, the only positive of which is that people do recognise it is not a short-term fix we're looking for. It's a sort of long-term thing, and the goal is 2020. So you assume that he'll be given a bit of time to tweak his team and tweak his system.
I can't believe you don't know the entire Belgian under-19 squad. Was it under-19?
Under-21.
Under-21. It's taken this long. We found the chink in your armour, Priya. Steve, do you have any thoughts on the England fans? I mean, I don't know how they're viewed over in Australia, England football fans. I mean, and everyone says it's a tiny minority. It is a minority, but it's not tiny. Booing the national anthem, throwing beer over tourists on canal boats, singing about the war. I sent a tweet saying, when will we stop singing about the war? And some of the replies are sort of I don't know what I was expecting, but I don't know how are they viewed from 10,000 miles away.
Yeah, well, it doesn't really make the news, that kind of stuff, but just from like an Australian perspective, I definitely find the singing about the war stuff kind of strange. But yeah, just the whole kind of football culture and the hooliganism culture, not that it's as prevalent as it was all those years ago, but like back home at games, you can, even at Aussie Rules games, at A-League games, like there's mixed fans, there's no separate away seating or home seating. You can sit wherever you want, apart from like other teams' active area.
And you can drink.
Mm. So yeah, seeing fans go into like someone else's city and start tearing the place up and being disrespectful, it's quite strange hearing Australians say that, maybe, but yeah, it's kind of odd because I don't know if we particularly have that culture.
It's how low it is if an Australian.
Controversial, but it's almost as if there are elements in this country where there's a history of going to other places and acting as if you own the place.
It's a good point. Southgate was at least critical of the national anthem. I mean,
in an impossible situation. Yeah. And I'm sure he's absolutely distraught by it. He doesn't want this to happen. On the other hand, the FA is doing absolutely nothing about it. It is not a new problem. It's not a resurgence of a new problem. It's a problem that's been there for all these years, that is glossed over because you might not have pitched battles in the streets, but everywhere they go, there is some kind of trouble. There is this kind of appalling behavior, getting drunk, insulting people, antisocial behavior. And as I think Kevin Miles of the FSF said, he said, yes, it's a minority, but it's a significant number of people. It's not like a 12 or 15 or 30 people whom you're going to isolate to say, okay, those guys, they're not traveling with England anymore. Okay, that's fine. We'll take their passports away. It's bigger than that. We all know that the England support is completely different from the support we have in the Premier League and the Championship. Completely different type of people. They don't generally go to games that much. When I say that, they don't go to games. They probably go to games, but they're not your average football fan. They're a very specific group of people. And when I say specific, I don't want to put everybody in the same, you know, taint everybody with the same brush. That would be totally unfair. And there has been some progress, but unfortunately, and I'm afraid it goes with what's happening in the country at large, is that we see an atmosphere of greater aggression, polarization.
And people are emboldened as well.
Absolutely.
By social media.
And absolutely. And, you know, a lot was made, for example, during the Euros when, you know, the Russian hooligan army arrived and basically beat the hell out of everybody. And the England fans were on the receiving end of that. And that is true. But what is also true is that England fans had created trouble of their own. Not as serious as that. They hadn't beaten up everybody. They hadn't sent anybody to hospital in fear, you know, of their lives and things like that. But the behavior was extremely antagonistic. I'm afraid this is
for
Southgate to put. Well, I don't know, but it would be very much Southgate shouldn't be put in a position. He's not responsible for these people. The people who are organising the England games. If you go to Wembley, actually, the games are perfectly all right. There's no problem. It's this travelling contingent which is creating the problems. And Southgate you probably would like to say this was despicable, which is, for example, has happened. Other managers of other national teams, when their fans have behaved badly, Germans, for example, have been very open about it, saying it's totally unacceptable, we don't recognise, we don't want their support. If Southgate says, we don't want the support of these people, my goodness, can you imagine that?
Yeah.
It's not up to him, not just up to him, it's up to the FA, isn't it? They organise all of this. I don't know. I mean, I'm
yeah, Danny Taylor was critical of just having a game on a Friday night in Amsterdam. I mean,
able to trust people to have to go to a game on a Friday night, for goodness sake.
Well, I agree with you. I mean, I don't know. It probably is just a massive lads tour. That's what it is.
It is partly the herd mentality.
I'm not absolutely sure that those guys have got much of an interest in football at all, to be honest.
Yeah.
It's the drinking and the holiday aspect of it.
Yeah, it's like Ayia Napa or Benidorm, you know. Let's get plastered.
Yeah. It's going to be interesting.
And show them.
It's going to be interesting, a precursor for the World Cup when Arsenal go to CSKA Moscow in a couple of weeks' time, and we'll see what happens there. But if there's trouble there, it could be something problematic come the summertime.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see how many of those England fans go to Russia.
It's very, very expensive to go there, as you know, so I don't know. But loads of tickets have been sold, so we're still talking about tens of thousands.
Changing tack, Jamie Vardy didn't touch the ball in 26 minutes. Optus senior data editor Matt Furness trawled through England and Premier League games since 2006-07, could only find one equivalent when Emmanuel Pogatech had zero touches in 26 minutes playing for West Ham against Southampton in April 2013. But Vardy will get his chance, I think, tomorrow night, and we'll start that game. And actually, being a centre-forward can be an utterly thankless task.
Just ask Bas Dost on Friday night.
Exactly right. Here's a message from Jake, who says, is Mason Mount the midfielder England seniors are missing? What do people think of him at Vitesse? Does he have a future at Chelsea? He falls into the under 23 years old bracket.
I think Mount looks really special at Vitesse. He's been excellent. Last year at the under 19 Euros, he was by far the best player at the tournament, playing in an attacking midfield role. It'll be interesting to see what happens next year, because he'll go back to Chelsea, and I'm sure after his season that he's had this year, he'll probably be looking for some game time.
And not get any, obviously.
I think the likelihood he'll probably go back on loan.
Yeah.
Just because we've had it with Lewis Baker, who was absolutely brilliant for Vitesse the season before this, and this season I think he's been loaned out to Borough. And has got absolutely no look in for their first team, just been on the sidelines, basically. And so, I mean, Eredivisie performances are a marker that comes with a lot of caveats. He does look special. He's only 19, and I applaud the decision for any English player to go abroad as a loan instead of just staying in the Championship. And he has looked good. I think he's the second youngest player with more than 10 goals and assists after Justin Kluivert. But as far as Chelsea go and as far as the England squad, I don't know if Southgate would give him a chance or something. But I think Chelsea, it's more of a reflection of the club than of his talent, but I'm not very convinced he'll get a chance.
That would be the only tiny little thing which, for me, maybe Southgate could be take more risks, is that England, it's amazing, by the way, the disconnect between the England we talk about, which is young, fresh, mm-hmm. Really good fun to watch, good guys, it seems, and these people who support or don't support them. Anyway, moving on. I would say that in many other countries, the fact that you can rely on such an extraordinary generation of young players who have basically swept everything in front of them, you would have at least two or three who would make it into the 23. I would like to think so. And I'm thinking, okay, Mason Mount as well. I mean, I'm wondering, Phil Foden gets game time with Manchester City, mm-hmm. the best team in the land.
But he didn't get a single minute so far with the under-19 team that's been playing this mm-hmm. week. And Mason Mount's been playing in that team with Reece Nelson and Eddie Nketiah from Arsenal as well.
Sancho, yeah.
Sancho hasn't been playing either. And Mason Mount's been the star of that team.
Foden and Sancho turned up late for training or something, so they...
Reportedly. Okay. Well, I don't know if it's...
But it would be a very different thing. Remember, you know, when Theo Walcott went to the World Cup with Sven, and people say it was laughable. And it was laughable because the guy wasn't playing at all. At all. This is different. We're talking about players who have already won things with their squad, their national team, and who also have significant, not insignificant game time, and are players of great promise, the likes of which do not have really an equivalent in the current squad that Southgate. So, I mean, it's a very minor point, to be honest, but it would be great to have these players coming in, perhaps, a bit earlier in the national team.
Yeah, I think someone like Mount or Foden, I'd be very surprised if they made it to the World Cup, would just add something slightly different to the midfield mix, a creative element. I think Mount could probably play a little bit deeper than he normally has been with Vitesse. Probably if they're playing a three-man midfield, could probably fit in there somewhere as a more of a creator that pushes forward and supports the attack. But yeah, I'd be very surprised if they did go, but it would be maybe refreshing to see someone like that there.
Not only will we win the World Cup, we're never going to lose it. That's the great news. Wales won 6-0 in China. Records for Gareth Bale. Their record ever goalscorer now overtaking Ian Rush, his hat-trick. He said becoming Wales all-time goalscorer could be the best achievement of his career. Even more excitingly is Chris Gunter has a fan club in China, which I was very pleased about. Producer Jonathan is very angry with me saying Gunter, not Gunter. But, you know, hey, worse things have happened, haven't they? Chris, however you pronounce his surname, I'm a big fan of his. But Giggs' first game, Philippe, good for them.
Absolutely. Not so good for China. Humiliation.
Oh, they looked so bad, didn't they?
Marcello Lippi's worst defeat as a national team manager. And when people thought, oh, he's starting to do some things with China and they're going up a bit in the classification, and they were absolutely awful defensively. This said, the Welsh goals were of terrific quality. And I discovered a player that you know much, much more of, probably both of
Harry
you.
Wilson.
Yeah. And who looked the part, didn't he?
Yeah, tell us about Harry.
Seen a couple. I know he plays off the wing, and the goal that he scored is pretty special on his left foot tuck in. He's got 3 and 6 now for Hull. But yeah, he's one that's been playing in the under-23s with Liverpool's youth team in the PL2, and I think he's got 10 and 12 there as well. So he's coming off the wing and cutting inside and seems to like that play, moving in onto his left foot and tucking away.
I would say you categorically know more than probably everyone listening to this about Harry Wilson. The final of the China Cup kicks off at 12:35 today, which for us is in 61 minutes' time. So we'll have probably just finished recording. If we haven't finished recording, producer Jonathan will be very disappointed.
Playing against Uruguay, aren't they?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. For whom Cavani scored an absolutely woo kind of goal.
Talk us through it.
Well, just watch it, guys. I'm sure you'll find it. It's pretty
spectacular. The fullback made a bit of a mistake, just trailing back that much and keeping him onside by about a metre.
I know it's a bit of a spectacular one that, you know, there's nobody near him. So, but still, it's absolutely beautiful to watch. And a very Cavani-esque goal. I mean, it's the amount, how he whacks it. It's just extraordinary. It generates so much power.
In the third place playoff, China went 1-0 up against the Czech Republic, but lost 4-1. Reports that Gareth Bale might be interested in a move to the Chinese Super League. Apparently, any potential move to Manchester United is now off because of Mourinho's treatment of Luke Shaw.
But will Mourinho be there in the summer?
That's true. Gareth Bale obviously empathises with all left-footed players. That's why they also share an agent. Anyway, I mean, that could all be nonsense. We don't know. Did you see Bale going to China?
No. Nope. Maybe Chris Gunter has a future there.
That's possible.
Gunter.
Relax.
Now, boyo. Chris Gunter rhymes with Junta, not Hunter.
No, I think it rhymes with Hunter,
Does it?
Yes. Yes.
No, I'm just trying to wind producer Jonathan up, and I'm succeeding.
Anyway, well done to Wales. Good luck in that game. You'll know the result by the time you listen to this. If Costa Rica beat Scotland one more time, they get to keep it, which is nice. Scotland lost 1-0 at home to Costa Rica. Alex McLeish's experimental lineup included places for Aberdeen centre-back Scott McKenna. Kevin McDonald partnered the newly Scottish Scott McTominay in midfield. McTominay has withdrawn from the squad, suffering mild regret, I presume. Ollie McBurney led the line, who I'm a huge fan of.
Richard, surely.
Oh, is that?
Him Richard?
I called him Richard. Yeah. Yes, and then I suddenly got worried about what his name actually was. I called him Richard, I think, on the radio. And then by the time he'd arrived at training that morning, the whole of the Swansea squad were calling him Richard. So I'd like everyone to keep calling him Richard. But he wears his socks in a Steve Claridge style, which is great.
And that's good enough for you.
Oh, yeah. Grant says, can Stephen talk up some young Scots ahead of our game with Hungary? No need to mention the Costa Rica score. Can you talk up any young Scots?
Well, Robertson at Liverpool has been sensational this year. He's really taken over that left-back spot, and I don't see Moreno getting too much of a look in until the end of the season. And then Kieran Tierney at Celtic, unfortunately, probably their two best players are both left-back, so that's a bit of a problem. One of them's generally been shifting out to the right to play for the national team. And then another one that's been standing out this season for me is one of their under-19 boys who's been scoring for absolute fun, UEFA Youth League with the under-19s at Scotland and for Celtic's development squad is Jack Aitchison, so he'll be one to look out for. I've probably got the pronunciation wrong, but
that's good enough for me.
I'm looking at the squad that has been for the Costa Rica and Hungary games, and one thing I noticed is that it's absolutely extraordinary. Of the 23, I think it's 23, only 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 have got 10 caps or more. It's absolutely extraordinary, isn't it? When you think it's a very young, very inexperienced team, but maybe shape of things to come. Exciting things to come.
Northern Ireland had a good win over South Korea. I wasn't expecting that. Paul Smythe, great story for him. He came on for an 8-minute debut, scored the winner, took it really well, actually. He played at Windsor Park recently for Linfield, left for QPR a few months ago, made his championship debut on New Year's Day, was called up after playing for the under-21s on Thursday night. He said, I was freaking out, to be fair, but I got my game head on once I took the chance. Smythe could still play for the Republic under that rule that if you're born in Northern Ireland, you can play for Northern Ireland or the Republic of Ireland, and he's yet to play a competitive game, but he has committed his allegiance to Northern Ireland. The Republic lost 1-0 in Turkey. Positives, apparently, a good debut for West Ham's Declan Rice, and nice to see Seamus Coleman back on the pitch. 62 minutes he played, a day short of a year since that horrible leg break when he was playing Wales. That'll do for part one. In part two, we'll look at some of the other internationals, talk about Zlatan and Thomas Tuchel, where he might be managing next season. Welcome back to the Guardian Football Weekly. Hey, Philippe.
Oui.
We're off to Belfast.
Yes, we are off to Belfast.
On the day before my 39th birthday.
Oh, is that so?
So we can celebrate with a birthday breakfast.
After having celebrated in good British fashion at Luton Airport.
Oh, yes. Everyone's favourite airport.
Oh, yes. We're so looking forward to that trip.
Is it fair to say you almost didn't come because we're flying from Luton?
That's the truth. I was almost thinking of I don't know, like hiring a car and taking a ferry or something like that.
Who would do that? Me, you, Wilson, Glenn Denning, in Belfast, if you're near Belfast, or in it, April the 17th, come and watch us. And then me, Wilson, Glenn Denning, and Ronay live in Copenhagen on May the 10th. We are one of the biggest sports podcast in Denmark, along with that excellent one who we stole the worm eating Sean Dyche story, which was the best part of our season. What are they called, Jonathan? Football Ministerials. So thank you to them. Germany won, Spain won.
Cracking game.
Who watched this?
Oh, it was brilliant.
Yeah, why was it so good?
It was a great justification of why international friendlies should actually be a thing.
Yep.
It was really good, because often in these fixtures, you have a mismatch in quality and one side just ends up dominating, like Russia versus Brazil, where the other one just can't be bothered, or there's just too much of a difference in quality. But this was brilliant, because both teams sent out very strong lineups, and both went out to win the game and looked to do it their way as well. Wasn't one team backing off and, you know, looking to just contain the other team's strengths. It was so good.
I think Germany only made four substitutions, which is in this kind of international very meaningful. And the quality of the football was really absolutely terrific.
Actually, yeah, all friendlies should be 60 minutes, because once you make five changes, no one can get into the game or not. Steve?
Yeah, is it a good vote of confidence then for the new Nations League that UEFA have implemented then?
Go on. I don't know about that. I mean, this game stood out because it was a proper game of football, whereas most of the others that we saw were not. It confirmed, I mean, I think the first half in particular was absolutely superb. If people are listening to us and haven't seen Iniesta's pass for the Spanish goal, please look at that. Please look at that. It's just absolutely glorious.
David,
the man still got it. Yeah. Oh, yes, he has.
Just a word to Iniesta. It's like kind of this ageless totem of Barcelona and Spain and everything they stood for in their glory days. He's probably still like one of the final remnants of that great squad from 2008 to 2010. And it's just brilliant to see that he can still produce and he's still so vital to both club and country.
Yeah, no, they were wonderful. The shooting was of the highest quality, which is not something that you see very often. And there was an intensity as well in the game that it is usually missing from this kind of friendlies. It was really taken very seriously, both by Lopetegui and by Joachim Löw. Superb spectacle.
David De Gea says the ball for this summer's World Cup is really strange and could have been made better. It's, you know, goalkeepers like to do this before every tournament, don't they?
Yeah, but they have got a point, haven't they, too?
What's wrong with this one?
I don't know. I'm not a goalkeeper, so I couldn't tell you. I'm sure that David De Gea is a much better place to...
I mean, it will take something special to top the Jabulani from 2010, so it can't be that bad.
Surely just get an Adidas Tango.
Yeah.
Everyone's happy.
Yes, we're all agreed on this one.
The human aeroplane, Jan Arge Fjørtoft, tweeted, "If Jurgen Klopp manages to get Timo Werner from RB Leipzig, it will be the signing of the summer. He is brilliant. The rumour is hot in Germany right now." Stephen, Timo Werner?
I'm pretty sure he came out and said in the media that he wanted to stay, though. He's brilliant, but yeah, with that whole front three that they've got going on at Liverpool, he probably fits into it, although he's definitely not as creative as Firmino, kind of dropping in and helping engage in the play. He's more of a guy that likes to sit off the shoulder of the last man and finish. He'd definitely be a good acquisition, but for the amount of money he would cost to be probably a sub at Liverpool, probably they should look at strengthening other areas first in midfield and defence.
Yeah, but it's not as fun, is it?
Strikers. Yeah.
Buy more strikers. Germany played Brazil on Tuesday. You mentioned that briefly. Brazil won 3-0 in Russia without Neymar. How bad were Russia?
Awful. Very negative. I don't know. They didn't seem to be that interested, to be honest. And neither did the Brazilians.
Yeah, probably could be the worst host side in... quite a long time.
I was thinking about it because sometimes the home sides were not great, but did something like South Africa was
South
a great
Africa,
side, but
exactly.
they had Japan and Korea also, they did something. Obviously, Brazil, it went a bit pear-shaped, but they were, you know, still, they gave us memories that we're not about to forget. And said, yes, I'm trying to go back. And you think, in 1998, they were pretty good. You know, so you've got to go back a long way to find us.
They were good in 66. I'm going to start singing a song now. Obviously, in 4 years' time, obviously, Qatar will be
Qatar drew, I think, 2-2 with Syria or something like that.
Which is a bad team, actually, so that's probably a bit of an achievement for them.
For Qatar, yes, it's an extraordinary achievement. They must have climbed up to the 109th place in the FIFA rankings.
Spain play Argentina, who beat Italy 2-0.
The only thing, by the way, the Russia-Brazil thing, the only thing worth watching is the work that Willian does for the third Brazilian goal, which is exactly the Willian we're seeing at the moment for Chelsea. Is absolutely frightening.
Is it too late to say Willian is still underrated? Or no. He still is underrated?
Yep.
Okay. Because he's really good at football.
He certainly is.
There we are. Spain play Argentina, who beat Italy 2-0.
With a strange team, strange-looking team. Loads of players who were not there.
I actually thought it was interesting to see Sampaoli's team kind of finally work together as a cohesive unit. And the left-back, Nicolas Tagliafico, has been probably the signing of the January window for Ajax. He's been brilliant in the Eredivisie. And it's kind of odd that they seem a really good unit but lack Dybala. And it's a pity for him because he's exceptional, but they do look a better team without him, and just, you know, Messi will probably slot in instead of Lanzini. But I think Argentina.
Are we sure?
Maybe for Di Maria.
Oh, not Di Maria. Di Maria is playing very, very well at the moment. I think he's a shoe-in in a way. Much more than Aguero, for example, is.
Yeah, absolutely.
Although beating Italy 2-0 is probably not the achievement it once was, because the Italian national team is a bit of a train wreck at the moment. Technically coachless.
Worse than the Dutch. I feel really good watching Italy play.
Di Biagio was the coach of the under-21s, and he wasn't great with a quite good bunch of under-21s in the last few editions of the under-21 Euros. The team, lacks structure. It lacks star power across the board, pretty much. Verratti never seems to perform with the national team quite like he does sometimes with PSG in the Champions
sometimes
League.
Sometimes is the important word in that sentence.
Always picks up his yellow cards. Fullbacks are hard to find in Serie A at the moment, Italian ones at least. The centre-back partnership of the past hasn't been able to hold things together like it has done. And then even up front, like players like Immobile and Insigne don't seem to live up to the national team as they do at club level, and both of them have been exceptional this season. Immobile can't stop scoring for Lazio, but national team level, they just can't get it all together.
So England can smash them on Tuesday night. France, Philippe.
Yeah.
What happened there? 2-0 up.
Dog's breakfast is...
Glauber says, do the French fans have any concerns over Lloris's form over recent months?
People are starting to talk about it, yes. I mean, it's definitely at fault on the opening goal for the Colombians, obviously. His distribution was not great. What I would say is that he's inconsistent this season, which is not something. Lloris was always incredibly consistent regularly, so, which means he's thinking a bit too much, I think, about what he's doing. But he's the number one. He's the captain. He's going to stay number one, the captain. And to be honest, if our biggest problem was Hugo Lloris in goal, my goodness, we'd have a good chance of winning the World Cup.
Your squad is amazing. I mean, the players you have to choose from are wonderful.
But who do we have to choose them?
It's also on paper, because someone like Ferran, we were talking about, is on paper. I mean, young defender plays Real Madrid, great, brilliant, but on the pitch, he hasn't really struck up a partnership with Umtiti.
It was with Umtiti, and you still say, okay, well, we've got a central defensive partnership. We've got the guy from Real Madrid and the guy who starts for Barcelona. That's pretty good. No, it's not. We've shipped 5 goals in 2 games, bad goals as well. We still have a problem with the fullbacks. Nobody seems to know exactly who should be playing fullback. Is it going to be Digne, who had a decent game, by the way? Kurzawa, please no. And you carry on like that. Instead of midfield, right, N'Golo Kanté, people who watch the highlights will think, oh, he didn't have a great game. He had a fantastic game. He made one mistake, which led to a goal after, 5 or 6 passes. So I would completely... He was really the star of the show. But do we have Rabiot with him? Pogba... at the moment, he's in a very strange place with the French national team as well as with Manchester United. Matuidi, perhaps not as great as people have said he was when he moved, because when he moved to Juve, people said, oh, look, it's fantastic. Well, actually, it's not quite working. Then up front, what do you do? Thomas Lemar was excellent. He did his cause a lot of good. Giroud was scored a goal, 30 goals now, which is, you know, not to be sniffed at in the national team, but didn't do too much. Griezmann had a game of three halves, so he was fantastic for a bit, good for a little bit, and terrible. And you carry on, and the team completely lost its shape, and it was 2-0 up, comfortable, but the Colombians were very aggressive, high press, and the French didn't know how to deal with that. And honestly, it's a real worry, because teams will look at that and think, oh, if we high press this back line, they're going to have problems, because we don't have, you know, CDB is not the most, I mean, I like him very much, but he's not the greatest distributor of the ball. Neither, I mean, Varane is supposedly in the team precisely for this quality of being able to spray the ball, play from the back and so forth. He didn't show it. So there are still other possibilities. Maybe Laporte should be brought in. We'll probably see Koscielny coming back, despite the fact we know he's not physically at 100%, and will never be again. So we have loads of open questions. And actually, Deschamps had exploded in the dressing, well, so to speak. It's after a manner of speaking.
Right, I understand.
He
got to stop taking these things literally from you, Philippe.
He addressed the players in a fairly robust fashion, shall we say.
Did he say, zut alors?
Yeah, and okay. In a different way, but that's what he said. But he put people in front of their responsibilities. It was totally, I mean, it was dreadful performance in the second half. It's worrying. I mean, I still can't see a team. I still can't see how this team is going to, you know, there is no system in place that it should be a 4-3-3, but does it work? No. And also the players are so different from each other. You know, playing with Pogba is not the same as playing with Matuidi, which is not the same as playing with Rabiot, which is not the same as playing with Tolisso, for example. I'd love to see more of him. And on and on. It carries on. And loads of questions. We're not in a good place at the moment. We're not.
More rumours today. Griezmann to Barcelona. Does anyone know?
Well, he's off. He's going, leaving Atletico. So yeah. Where to is... You know, why not?
Well, it makes sense in as much as Suarez is definitely coming towards the end of his kind of career at the top. I would still love for him to come to Ajax, because I think he could still smash it like 30 goals a season there. But deviating from the point, I think it will be interesting, because if you think about the fact that they have Coutinho, they have Dembele, and obviously Messi, and you start to think, where does Griezmann fit into that? Because you would think maybe Coutinho drops into midfield and you have Dembele and Messi on the sides and Griezmann kind of going forward. But then Griezmann also plays with a centre-forward at Atletico, and that seems to bring the best out of him. And Barcelona don't really have the sort of Diego Costa or, you know, Fernando Torres or whatever. So it makes sense in as much as Barcelona buying one of their rivals' best players, and he will definitely, wherever he plays, he'll probably score goals. But If you think about Champions League or a sort of system that Valverde wants to build, it doesn't really make sense as an ideal replacement for Luis Suarez.
So you could bring in Griezmann, but you'd have to bring in Baz Dost as well.
Or the other chap.
Or the bigger lump.
Weghorst, yeah.
Portugal beat Egypt 2-1 in the... what was touted as Mo Salah versus Cristiano Ronaldo and vaguely turned out that way. Salah scored a lovely goal, and then Ronaldo scored two goals in injury time.
I'm looking forward to the Netherlands playing Portugal. Just because I think it's a very interesting clash of two teams there, where the Netherlands have just in recent times been so hung up on the right way to play and the right way to win, whereas Portugal, by virtue of having this absolutely incredible once-in-a-generation sort of star, but also a team that is ready to support him and, you know, compromise sort of in their style of play in order to cater to his strengths. And Koeman talked about it in his press conference, where he said, the reality is we don't have good players. We don't have a Cristiano Ronaldo in the Netherlands. And
neither do you have a Bernardo Silva.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
he's special.
Zlatan. Has Sweden lost 2-1 to Chile? Zlatan has said, if I feel well, capable of giving what I can, the door will always be open. If I want to, I'll be there. If not, no, I want to play football. We'll see what happens.
They've got Marcus Berg. They don't need Zlatan.
He's off to LA Galaxy. Stephen, I sort of feel for the A-League in Australia, because that was hoovering up old people who were good at football. And now, because America's closer, MLS gets them and you don't.
We did have Del Piero, which is lovely. yeah, they've definitely taken a lot more exciting marquees than we have. Their style of quality of football is probably a fair bit better in the MLS than it is back home. So no surprises to see Zlatan in LA Galaxy and not at Central Coast Mariners.
You were saying before, this is an old school MLS signing. As
a bit, yes. When Franz Beckenbauer went there, or Cruyff came out of retirement after his pig farm scandal, just because he needed the cash. And it's very much an old style. I mean, we're not talking about a player who is, you know, if you think of some, even Thierry Henry, for example, when he came to MLS, there was a real, it was fantastic for the league, but it was also fantastic for the Red Bulls. And also, he did the job for 4 years.
David Villa as well has been brilliant for New York.
Yes, absolutely, absolutely. So you can even say Jermain Defoe of Toronto.
Yeah.
He's got a few. So we're not talking players in the absolute, you know.
Sebastian Giovinco has been absolute revelation.
Exactly. So this is an old-style, yes, signing. It's loads of glitter.
Could you just tell us briefly the Cruyff pig farm story for the younger listeners?
He got into business with a very shady guy, I think, during his time at Barcelona. It is basically all it is. Invested a lot of money in pig farming for some reason. And this guy was someone he trusted as an advisor when he was at Barcelona as well. And it ended up bankrupting him, which is why he had to go back to playing football. And he actually trialed with a lot of sides before he went to America. He went to Levante, spent a while in the US, came back, and he played for FC Dordrecht in friendlies against Chelsea and Ajax as well, and then eventually went back to Ajax. But it's interesting to think that second part of his career may have never happened if that pig farming venture had actually gone well.
Former Borussia Dortmund boss Thomas Tuchel has agreed a deal to become Arsenal manager, according to reports in Germany. And Thomas Tuchel is set to join Chelsea, according to reports in Germany. And Thomas Tuchel is set to take over at PSG, according to reports in Germany.
And in France.
And in France, yes. So I don't know who to believe, Philippe.
If I have to, it's like the three-card trick.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so I will say Arsenal.
What would you say? Chelsea.
I'd say Chelsea.
Okay, you're 2-1 down here, Philippe.
That's right, that's fine.
Is anyone basing this on anything?
No.
I probably rule Arsenal out just because of his relationship with Mislintat, the scout.
He's the head of transfers at Arsenal that they got in earlier this year, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And what happened, ma'am?
They had a big falling out at Dortmund, Sven Mislintat. They were not even on speaking terms for up to, I think, a year before Tuchel eventually left. I'm not sure how that's going to pan out.
It's like me and Barry off air. So he wasn't speaking for a whole year. That's ludicrous.
Tuchel wanted more control of the transfers and the spending, or at least more of a say, and apparently there was falling out there. But that entire departure from Dortmund was partly a pity, because what he was building there was very impressive. I'm a big, big fan of Tuchel. And actually, when Peter Bosz went to Dortmund, I thought it would be interesting if Ajax could get Tuchel in to replace him. But he's really good. He is kind of a modern era Wenger, if you think of it from that angle, because he's a degree in economics. But even beyond that, he's very innovative in the way he goes about his trainings. He sets out every single cone in training. And he's had one of the best kind of mentorship journeys, because he started at Mainz, where he took over from Klopp, obviously, and he's kind of followed his path. But in his 1 year gap year that he took after Mainz, he actually went and spoke to Pep Guardiola, who's at Munich at the time. And there are reports of them sitting at a bar. As the conversation escalated, they started using the salt and pepper shakers as to discuss tactics. And he's put to Cruyff before he passed away. He's gone around speaking to sports scientists and professors, and he seems to show a really real curiosity to improve not just his team, but essentially the way football is run and the way we go about training and methodology.
But Stephen, you would say at Chelsea it doesn't sound like a Tuchel-y club, you know?
But I think that's presents a chance to kind of revolutionise the way that Chelsea play as well. And I think Chelsea might actually be looking for that after what they've gone through the last few years with Mourinho and now Conte. I think I think he could take some of the players that have been kind of cast off, especially one in the style of Batshuayi. He's scoring for fun at Dortmund, and I think he's also kind of got some of those Aubameyang qualities that I think Tuchel get the best out of. And even just filtering younger players through, reducing that bridge that we've seen emerge that players can't cross
that
at Chelsea.
Bridge. Ho, ho, ho.
Oh, nice.
Stephen, you're following the Socceroos.
Unfortunately.
For the three games they're going to have in Russia. You went 1-0 up against Norway and lost 4-1. Do you have enthusiasm for your new manager?
I had a little bit of enthusiasm when they signed Van Marwijk, but...
Is he going to get you to the World Cup final?
No. After the game this week, I was a little bit less enthused. He seems to have just... I thought this might happen, but he's totally abandoned the system that Ange Postecoglou, the previous manager, has had in place for the last 4 years since the last World Cup. And he's gone straight to his style of trying to set up a solid back four and work from that. But especially the Socceroos are playing a back three under Ange as well, so that's a change. And I just don't know if there's enough time to implement that style that he wants between now and the World Cup. Well, they'll only play, three or four more games between now and then.
What's your group again?
It is France in the first game in Kazan. And then
you got a chance.
Peru and Denmark. So it's not the easiest group either. I think we might struggle against Denmark, especially someone like Eriksen playing balls through our weak defence. Fullbacks, like a real problem. They don't really... There's not a real standout starting back four as well. So if you want to create a back four with some solidity, it's always nice to have the same consistent options always starting your defence and creating that relationship. And so it kind of looks like a team now that just plays with little identity.
Is it keep it tight and get Tim Cahill on for the last 10 minutes?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, and hope that he headers one in.
But the adoration of Cahill in Australia is incredible.
But the problem with Cahill is that he's very old now and isn't the same player that he once was. And he's been bouncing around clubs. He wasn't starting for Melbourne City, and now he's ended up at Millwall playing 3 minutes a week and picking up his routine booking. It just looks like a team now that it doesn't really have an identity of the way they really want to play.
Could Tim Cahill be the Roger Miller of 2018?
Well, he will have scored in his fourth World Cup if he manages to get one this year, but I'm not too sure whether he will, coming off the bench for the last...
But he will definitely go. I mean, I think even if he didn't need to come to Millwall, I think he could have... He would just automatically be in the squad.
He'll be in the squad as a symbolic gesture. He'll probably get minutes as well, but he's... probably doesn't deserve to be in the squad on pure club form when he has pretty much barely played for the last 2 years since he went to Melbourne City. I almost said Manchester City.
I mean, they're virtually one and the same, aren't they? Well done to Gibraltar. Notts County's Liam Walker scored a deflected free kick in the 88th minute against Latvia to hand Gibraltar only their second ever win and their first at home. Cue incredible celebrations on their 4G. I think it's 4G. It might be 3G. It was a G pitch of some sort. That'll do for part two. We'll come back in part three with the Football League. Welcome back to Guardian Football Weekly. Fergus has sent this question, Stephen. This is a statement, not a question. So he sent this statement. Premier League clubs have become incredibly lazy in scouting talent. Surely any well-run business should be looking to unearth talent at a fraction of the price instead of bringing in overpriced mercenaries. Given your work looking at youth team players, would you agree with that statement from Fergus?
No, I just think that a lot of those players just never make the first team. Like with Chelsea, for example, they go out on loan and it's more of a cash farming initiative more than a view to have those players embedded in the future into the first team.
What would you do to change things? Just give them first team football?
Well, you've got to have a system in place, a manager that wants to blood those type of players or the right ones that they think could fit their system. But I think, again, the high pressure of the Premier League is something that stops those players from getting chances. I think actually what Chelsea have done with the loan system with Vitesse has actually been quite beneficial. It's just that they failed in that second part of the equation, that when the players actually are ready, then they're still just not giving a chance and sold or left to rot in the under-23s. So I think even if they go one step further and do what they did with Christensen, send him on loan to Germany, a higher level, that could be another step that's that's more beneficial in getting them accustomed to that higher level of football, a step higher than the Eredivisie, before they try and embed them into the first team.
Football lead time, no games obviously in the Championship, but the Nottingham Forest owner, Evangelos Marinakis, has
one of my great friends, yes.
Is he a good friend of yours?
Yeah, really, really. I think he absolutely loved what we wrote on this case in France Football a couple of years ago. Who, of course, passed the fit and proper person test with flying colours.
He's been charged with drug trafficking, according to reports in Greece.
Good friend of Gianni Infantino. They know each other quite well. It's true. It's a fact.
I just.
And Michel Platini too.
All roads lead to Infantino.
Sure, there's some.
I just thought I would mention it.
If there are any lawyers listening,
But being friends with somebody doesn't mean you share their activities.
No, you're right. Like he has denied any involvement, saying he's innocent, a victim of a plot. It follows an investigation into a tanker that was carrying a mere 2.1 tons of heroin in 2014. The prosecution against me is a product of a plot. It has nothing to do with the truth. I've never had anything to do with the acts for which an investigative inquiry is to be conducted, the result of which I am absolutely certain to be the confirmation of my innocence. He's also facing trial after being accused of trying to fix football matches in Greece. He's denied any wrongdoing. As producer Jonathan points out, he's yet to wander onto the pitch with a gun in his holster.
He has other people to do that for him.
In League One, Shrewsbury atop. They beat AFC Wimbledon 1-0. Wigan are 1 point behind in second with two games in hand. They won 2-0 at Bury, who are rock bottom. Blackburn didn't play. 1 point behind Wigan, have played a game more. Rotherham, Scunthorpe and Peterborough make up the playoff places. None of them won. Scunthorpe, with no win in eight, decided to sack their manager, Graham Alexander, even though they're in the playoff places. Oxford United's manager Carl Robinson lost his first game 3-0 at Portsmouth yesterday. A disappointing minute for Alex Mowat. Did you see this?
No.
He missed a penalty, hit the post. Portsmouth defender Nathan Thompson did a sort of mini Keown in his face. Mm-hmm. Just went up and celebrated in his face. So Mowat slapped him around the face. Nathan Thompson then fell to the floor as if he'd been poleaxed. Mowat got sent off. The ref afterwards said he had booked Thompson during that incident, but he didn't, because he'd already booked him and he didn't send him off. So, I mean, really, Thompson is just, it's like so Sunday League, the way he cheers in his face. Apparently, there is previous when he was at Swindon. It was quite funny, really. At the bottom, Bury 10 points from safety. Rochdale 5 points from safety. MK Dons and Northampton make up the relegation spots at the moment. In League 2, Luton went back to the top of League 2 after a 2-0 win over Barnet, their first win in a while. That was Martin Allen's first game in charge of Barnet in his, I think, his fifth time of managing them. Second place, Accrington Stanley didn't play. They're level on points with Luton with two games in hand. Wickham a third, held to a goalless draw at home by Port Vale. At the bottom, Barnet's defeat means they're 7 points from safety, 4 points behind second bottom Chesterfield, who beat fourth place Notts County 3-1 at Priestfield. And in Sol Campbell news, he's working at QPR on a temporary basis as a coach while he continues to seek a club to start his managerial career. Did anybody see Salford's comeback against Kidderminster?
No, but you're going to tell us.
I'm going to tell you, yeah. Kidderminster were 4-0 up in the 80th minute.
Oh, come on.
Salford scored in the 80th minute, the 89th minute, the 93rd minute. Then they got a penalty in the 96th, which the keeper saved. But Tom Walker followed up the rebound, 4-4.
Oh, fantastic.
So well done to them. Tom Hart writes, Scottish football news, Football Corner. Should Barry ever return? Thursday, everybody. His next Football Corner should contain an honourable mention to Brechin City in the Scottish Championship. They've become the first team in the top four English or Scottish leagues to be relegated. They haven't won a match all season. Played 29, won 0, drawn 4, lost 25, goal difference of minus 46.
I think in the vein of like the UEFA League of Nations, we should have like a league of teams like that team, Benevento, and, you know, all these teams that can't win in their top divisions, just play against each other, come up with the ultimate relegation fight. International
delete
relegation
club if
fight.
You lose that relegation challenge.
Oh, what, you no longer exist? God, that would be a killer, wouldn't it? Dean Walker is the chairman of the Brechin Supporters Club. He says, we've actually played quite well against the higher teams. St Mirren, Dundee United. Just trying to get the ball into the back of the net. I'm a very positive man. This guy also follows Scotland home and away for light relief. He just says going to the games is usually just fans with their headphones on, listening to music and having a laugh.
Maybe they'll listen to the podcast at the games now.
Isn't that great? What playlist should I put on while I watch Brecon getting beaten? Here's a question from Simon, who says, interesting discussion on whether having a women's team should be mandatory for Premier League clubs. An even more interesting idea would be to have a single league table for both the women's and men's teams, with league victory as well as Champions League qualification and relegation.
Chelsea ladies would be carrying their men's team.
Exactly. It would be decided on the combined performances. Under that scenario,
Sunderland as well.
Owners, broadcasters and fans would instantly become very interested in the performance of the women's teams, investing them accordingly.
Yeah.
It would rely on the teams playing the same leagues, though.
And that is tricky. I think there's also an argument to be made that, to an extent, they are the same sport, but they do have their differences. And it's important to recognise that women's football can have differences and be, you know, still be good to watch as football.
It doesn't have to be tied to the men's club for interest to people.
It's just, yeah.
What's happening in the Champions League, Women's Champions League?
Yeah. The first legs of the quarterfinals have been played. So Lyon beat Barcelona last week, where Lucy Bronze played just an amazing part in setting up the first goal for Lyon. I think it was Amandine Henry who won the ball back in midfield, played it to...
She's fabulous.
She is.
She's fantastic.
Both her and Vicky Lozada, who used to be at Arsenal, were brilliant in a really good midfield battle. But so she won the ball, passed it to Lucy Bronze, who went on this amazing dribble from near the centre circle all the way to around the penalty area and played a brilliantly weighted ball to... the German Jennifer Marazan, who had I think it was an outside of the foot finish, maybe. She opened the scoring, and then Barcelona pulled one back before, Lyon scored again through Hegerberg this time. It just really kind of, there was a really good cross from Van der Sanden, but ultimately the finish just trickled into the back of the net in a very agonising fashion. But it's impressive from Barcelona, because Lyon are a real superpower in women's football. So just to hold them 2-1 was incredible. And the refereeing decisions were a bit dodgy as well, so it could have gone either way. So the return leg should be fun, but I'd say not to Chelsea, because I think they put out the most impressive performance of the round. They went away to Montpellier and won 2-0. And if any Chelsea fans of the men's side are tired of watching Conte's football, I'd really recommend watching their ladies team, because they play probably the best football in England for sure. They're currently top of the table. They're in the semi-finals for the SSC Women's FA Cup, and they have a really good understanding between Ji So-yeon, who's their South Korean midfielder. She is a joy to watch. And they've got they signed the Norwegian captain Maren Mjelde in the summer as well. She's been a revelation, and they're just a brilliant antidote to the Chelsea that we see in men's football.
Feedback corner and questions.
Just one thing, because I don't know if you've mentioned it on the pod, but I'm saying that because I'm a member of the national committee, but the FWA Football Writers Association. And it's got to do everything
with
the
first women's,
so which is an excellent development. Obviously, it's always been about the footballer of the year, and it was decided that we were going to have also a woman footballer of the year, and it was going to be on the same night as the footballer of the year, which I think brilliant development. So, and also the women footballer of the year will not be chosen by the members of the FWA for the simple reason that they don't follow women's football closely enough. So there is a subcommittee which has Alex Scott, for example, and Rachel Finnis-Brown among the members of the committee.
Some brilliant writers on it as well. Kieran Thavam is very good.
Absolutely.
Rich Laverty.
So, and it's all coming together, and it's going to be the first time, and it will be a Thursday the 10th at the Landmark Hotel. So I say well done, the FWA.
Well done, them.
Yep.
Questions, feedback corner. Stephen, here's a question from Siddharth. Says, is diving to get a penalty on a par with tampering in cricket?
I think the ball tampering is worse just because it's premeditated and you have to make a decision to do it, whereas diving's kind of instinctual. You feel like the contact's coming, you go down. So, yes, Australia are a bad country.
Yeah. But you had the
That's what I was hoping for. Ram says, why don't you talk enough about Wes Hoolahan? We can only apologise. Ari says, on the whole socks saga, this is Jonathan Wilson who has a rotation policy.
I'm wearing Batman's socks today, I think.
For his socks.
I've got squirrels.
What about socks?
Yeah. Just a very boring black socks, I'm afraid.
Yeah, I'm on a plain sock with you. Ari says, on the whole socks saga, I live in Israel. It's very hot most of the year. In addition to the regular mid-calf socks, I have another type of sock that covers up to the ankle that I wear most of the year. Reminds me that Nicky Butt once said in the class of 92, Sir Alex told him he won't play him because the ground was too nice and he'll be his player in November. So that's like me telling my long socks I'm going to play them in January. By the way, as an Israeli listening, it sounds to me you only mention us when laughing at Avram Grant or that Ronnie Rosenthal miss. I want to remind you can also laugh at Yossi Ben-Ayoun for playing at four London clubs in 5 years. Thank you so much.
Talking about socks, you know Raja Nainggolan, his thing with socks.
No,
he takes scissors and he cuts the back.
A lot of players do that.
And
now.
Bale does it. I think Gareth Bale does it too.
Pretty much every player.
Too much pressure on the calf.
Mm. No. I see the kids in my team do that.
Really?
Yeah. That's madness, isn't it? The game's gone.
The game's gone.
Matthew finally asks, who was everyone's favourite Spice Girl? Stephen?
Posh.
Sporty. Mel C.
None.
If you had to pick one, gun against your head.
Well, don't do that. That's really quite aggressive.
It would be a strange...
The pod is no longer a safe place. I would go for Sporty.
It would be a strange place for me to suddenly carry a gun for that reason, just to elicit people's favourite Spice Girl.
Actually, in Anna Kessel's, right, at The Guardian, her book Eat, Sweat, Play, she talks quite a bit about the impact of Sporty Spice as a kind of role model in popular media of sport for women. So, yeah, she would be the right choice. There is no other right choice.
Well, thank you for adding... What was actually an erudite contribution to the Who's Your Favourite Spice Girl? And on that note, Stephen, thank you for your time.
Thank you very much for having me.
Thank you, Priya.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Philippe.
Thank you, Max.
Back on Thursday.
For more great podcasts from The Guardian, just go to theguardian.com/podcasts.